20 veterans of World War II told their life stories in 2018 as part of South Australia's contribution to the Anzac Day commemoration initiative. They enriched our collective memory accordingly. So strong has been the public response that now another 6 veterans have been interviewed, adding their voices to this exercise in oral history. And so, in 2019, we have the honour of presenting World War II in Words, Part 2. The war itself is remembered as a time of oppression and destruction, lasting 6 years and forever reshaping each society caught in its conflict. In addition, though, it fostered mateship and achievement and honour. In this second series of interviews, our 6 veterans reflect on the emergence of those qualities in that life-changing era. Their words supply an enduring record of service and survival. To the conflict at sea now, and the memories of able seaman gunner Brian Lay, who saw the Panama Canal, Florida, and New York, as well as surviving the torpedo attack on HMAS Hobart. From the quiet of a retirement home in Adelaide's eastern suburbs, he recalls a war rich in encounter and high in dramatic incident. You were born in 1923, yep. 19th of August. Yep. Tell me about your early life, your parents and your home life.
I know this off pat. My parents, Clem Lay and Jean Drew, was the daughter of Annie Long, and she lived in Dulwich in a villa, and my mother and father and me went to live with her, and living with her was her father, my great-grandfather, James Grant, who'd come to Australia in 1860 with 3 daughters, and one Auntie Nell, Helen her name was. She married a fellow named Alec Lyon, who was Secretary of the Commercial Travellers Association. And they had another daughter, and she died, and I don't know any... I had the family tree, but in my house that I've just sold, I got lost.
What were your very earliest memories living with your parents? Yeah. What can you recall?
Well, yeah, I'm coming to that. Anyway, we lived there and for 6 years, because my father was an electrical engineer at the converter station on the corner of Grenfell Street and East Terrace, where the electricity from the Osborne Power Works was altered to suit running the trams. But the government, in its wisdom, had built a powerhouse at about berth 20 of the wharves at Port Adelaide for the tramways. And my father had to go to work at Port Adelaide. So we left my grandmother's house, and my father bought a house at 15 Rowson Street, Largs Bay. And I was 6 years old. And I have 2 vivid memories of my life, of my great-grandfather who used to look after me and sing me songs. And when we went to live at Largs, we took some fowls on the truck, and they all escaped on the journey down to Largs Bay. But forgetting that, I was 6 years old, and I went to the Largs Bay Primary School for all my primary school days, and everything was English in those days. There was no Australian nation. Everything was God Save the King, and King George V was the King of Australia. Yeah. And I grew up as a Anglican, if you like, and my father was a Catholic, my mother was an Anglican, and my father sort of gave up his religion. He never went to church that I can recall. And anyway, carry on. Came 1939, we used to have to do the QC exam, the qualifying certificate, to go to higher school from primary school. Right. And the students of, no, it was 1936.
Right.
And we went to Lefevre School to do the exam, and blow me down if I didn't score 698 out of 700 marks, and I was the ducks of the district. I was the leading scholar of Semaphore, Port Adelaide, Largs Bay, Ethelton, all the schools. And yes, this had to be 1939 was a make or break season. My father wanted me to go to, and I did the leaving exam, and I failed it. I only got three subjects, and I didn't get any the English, and no, I didn't get a language. And if I'd, my dad wanted me to go to university, but the war was pending, and I wasn't qualified to go on unless I could get English and a language, which meant Adelaide High or a private college. But as I say, the war saved me. I talked my dad into letting me get a job, leave school, get a job, and I got a job at the Executive Trustee and Agency Company, 22 Grenfell Street. And I'm leading up to something
That's
here.
That's all right.
And the assistant manager of the trustee company was a chap named Roy Middleton. And he was vice president of SACCA, the South Australian Cricket Association.
Right.
And I'm working in the real estate department. And I used to go at 10 o'clock every morning to the Victoria Square, to the Lands Titles office, with contracts to have them made into Torrens Titles, you see. And I used to go across the road to Alma Chambers, where it had Harry Hodgett's sharebroker.
Yes.
And I made my way through to Victoria Square and did this and every morning. And now let me think what I've got to lead up to here. The war is on. The war has started. No, we went to my father's brother's elder's house on a Sunday often, and on this particular Sunday in 1939, we were listening to the radio, and Mr. Menzies came on to say, it is my melancholy, no, word has come through that Germany has attacked Poland, and as a result, Britain is now at war with Germany. And as a consequence, Australia is now at war with Germany.
Yes.
And this was September the 3rd, 1939. I was at school at that time, so I left school, got this job. I was working for the trustee company with Roy Middleton, and they used to have an annual cricket match between Elders Trustee at Executive Trustee, and because of Roy Middleton's fact that he was vice president and going to be president, the game was played on Adelaide Oval.
Right.
And on this particular day in 1942, before I joined the Navy, I'm playing cricket and I got a wicket in the last over before lunch, and as we came off, Sir Don Bradman was there with Roy Middleton.
Right.
And Bradman said, "Well played, lad. Grimmie will have to look after himself with you about." That was very good over. I watched it.
So were you a leg spinner?
Hmm?
Were you a leg spinner?
A leg spinner.
Leg spinner, yeah.
So we all go into lunch And everybody wants to talk to, what did he say to you? Because there were only three things in Australia that counted at that time: Farlap, Sydney Harbour Bridge, and Don Bradman. And I immediately became known as a friend of Don Bradman, which wasn't true at all. But nevertheless, it's stuck with me. All, have a look behind you and yes. the various things I brought to the house. Of the life of Don Bradman yes. is up on the wall there. Anyway, to cut a long story short, the fact the war started, I worked 41 and 42, the trustee company, right. and on the 19th of August, 41, I enlisted, signed myself right. up. And I got called up on the 10th of March, 1942, and there's the photos of the yes. fellows that I got to know, and I'd known before. And I went to Flinders, to Melbourne on the train. This is where Douglas MacArthur was at another platform.
Now, you arrived at the station in Melbourne,
yeah.
and you saw
Douglas MacArthur arriving in Australia to take charge of defending Australia, if you like, because that's what he did. I'm going to mention this in a moment. And anyway, I have to wait until the 10th of March. I'm on the train. I go to Melbourne. I'm in the new entrant class, and I got chosen to do officer training.
Right.
The third, and we went to the academy. All the young fellows who were learning to be officers went to the captain's rooms, and I don't know where the captain went, to the hotel, I suppose. And I was in the third class, and we had to, doing everything right, and we had to have an interview with a committee of three, chaired by a Royal Navy commander, straight-laced,
right.
and he asked a few questions, and he said to me, getting near the end of my interview, what would you think if I mentioned the words LTO to you? And I thought for a minute, what's the first thing that came to your mind? And I said, Land's Titles Office.
Yes.
I used to have to do it. And he looked at me, he said, are you trying to be funny with me? I said, no, sir, you said the first thing. I know it means leading torpedo operator. That cost me a commission.
Gee.
But on now I'm going to mention something here that I've been to some extent pleased I said that because I got immediately promoted from an ordinary seaman to an able seaman right. and got sent to to join the Hobart. Well, all those who passed then started their long thing of getting uniforms and whatnot. And I mentioned Roy Middleton. Well, his son, Clem Middleton, I knew quite well, and he was in the class. And he got a commission, and he got sent to Darwin to form part of the crews of the Fair Miles that Britain had given to Australia to protect the northern approaches from the Japanese. And he spent the whole war operating Fair Miles in and around the coast of Australia. And I don't know that they stopped the Japs. The thing that stopped the Japs from attacking Australia was the Henderson Airfield on New Guinea.
What are these Fair Miles? What were they?
They were like a motor torpedo boat,
yes.
but not as fast. Right. They were a launch
yes.
rather than a speedboat.
I understand.
But they could cruise. They were flat bottom. They could go close inshore and look at all the inlets to see if there were any Japs arrived.
So I could say your recollections are just extraordinary. Incredible clarity of memory of what you saw and what you experienced. And you've got the dates right down. It's remarkable. So you left Flinders?
Well, I immediately was promoted able seaman.
Yeah.
And I went to Sydney, I think it was, on the train. And then I got on a Corvette. I've forgotten the name of the Corvette. And we headed north. And I way up inside the Barrier Reef, Hobart was waiting, and that's when I went aboard.
Now, this is HMAS Hobart.
Yeah.
A light cruiser, Leander class, Royal Australian Navy.
Yeah.
Had formerly been Royal Navy's HMS Apollo.
That's it.
Okay.
And she was a gift to Australia after the Sydney got sunk.
Right.
So we had the Perth, and we didn't have a very big navy. We had the Perth and the Hobart, and we had the Canberra, and the Australia were 8-inch cruisers. And then we had a host of the scrap iron flotilla, the Vampire, the Water Hen, we had six of them, but they were all 1914-18
war. So you joined the Hobart.
And I joined the Hobart.
And what was your particular job in the crew then?
Well, I'll keep it as brief as I can. We were cruising in the Coral Sea.
Yes.
The Hobart and the Australia had met the Japs in the Coral Sea earlier in late 1941. And how Hobart got the lucky name, the lucky ship, an American pilot dropped bombs on her and they never exploded.
Friendly fire.
Yeah.
Yes. And you were a gunner yourself?
No, I wasn't there then. That was her history. And when I got...
There was a famous incident about that. That's right. The American Air Force came in over.
Yeah.
And it says here that the United States General refused to even acknowledge that friendly fire incident happened. But it did happen because you were there.
Yeah.
So they dropped bombs?
I wasn't there then. I came just after General MacArthur had arrived in Melbourne the same day I did, but he had taken charge. Now, little has ever been written about this, but there was an island called Guadalcanal.
Yes.
Had an airfield on it, the Henderson Airfield.
Right.
And this airfield was big enough for Americans to fly four-engine bombers and bomb places belonging to Japan. And they even bombed Tokyo from that airport. Now, the Japs wanted, above everything, the Henderson Airfield and Port Moresby to attack Australia. And when they couldn't get to the airfield, MacArthur did another thing. He didn't waste time. He starved the Japs in New Guinea. Any ships that got close, they attacked them, but they never went out looking to attack them. And it came a point when General MacArthur sent for the third, the radar battalion from America, the 3rd Marine Radar Battalion, and sent them to Guadalcanal to protect the Henderson airfield.
Now, the Hobart supported landings in this area as well, didn't they? Amphibious landings?
No. What happened was the radar battalion from America went to New Zealand and did a very quick course of what they would strike in New Guinea. And the Hobart was at Davo Island with the Canberra and the Water Hen and the Voyager, and the Canberra got sunk. But the Hobart wasn't there. She was on the way to New Zealand to escort the radar battalion back to New Guinea to save that airfield.
Gotcha.
And, of course, the end result was they starved the... and the Japs then decided they'd go overland to get to Port Moresby. But for one thing, MacArthur asked Menzies, I think it was Prime Minister at the time, could he have two divisions from the Middle East?
Yeah.
And the 6th and 9th divisions were taken to New Guinea and stopped the Japs on the Kokoda Trail.
Exactly.
And that was the end of...
But then the Hobart, famous incident...
She went down to New Zealand to escort...
Sure.
Yeah.
But on the 20th of July, 1943... Sailing to Espiritu Santo.
14th of July, wasn't it?
All right, well, I'm just looking at you. Probably better than the...
Well, it was my dad's birthday.
Well, then it must have been the 14th of July.
Yeah.
All right, which is best.
Well, I've always thought it was the 14th of July.
You're probably right,
well,
Brian.
When I got to the Hobart, I had to be interviewed by the gunnery officer, and he said, I see by your records you've done a lot of things that even I don't know how to do. He said, one of the jobs I'm going to give you is in the where the plotting table is, the 7 decks down.
Okay.
And we used to, when it was just cruising and nothing happening, the band used to, on board, used to look after us, sit down there. But when there was anything on, they had 6 people, and I was one of them, that sat round the plotting table,
right.
And the information from above would be worked out so that the whole of the 16 guns on the Hobart would all be at the same angle of elevation, so if aircraft was coming, everything could go exactly right. That was the theory of it all. But what happened was we were cruising along with 2 American destroyers, I've forgotten their name,
right.
And us doing 17 knots, and I'm down below in the plotting table, the room, what they call
it. I'm not a sailor.
Anyway, boom.
Yep.
The torpedo hit on the port side aft. Most of those killed were officers, because it was dinner time, and it hit at the Y turret, which is the last turret, and they would have been walking after their dinner on the quarter deck, but it knocked the propeller out, 2 propellers, and the rudder was buggered, and we were stationary. The 2 American destroyers...
I've got their names here. I'm looking up the record now.
Yeah.
The USS Nicholas and the Radford.
The which?
Radford.
That's it.
Yeah. Two. Now it says here, 7 officers and 6 crewmen were killed.
Yeah.
Another 6 officers, 1 sailor wounded. So this was a really significant...
I think there were more than that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But because you were down in the plot room...
The water went out, close and lock all watertight doors and hatches.
Right, the water went out.
Yeah, and it was black dark.
Yep.
And we were there from 6 p.m. or whatever it was till 7 a.m. the next morning, sitting in the black dark.
Sitting in the black?
Yeah.
Thinking you might sink any minute?
Yeah, thinking there's a submarine out there who's stuck a torpedo into us. He obviously wants to sink us. But the 2 destroyers kept him off. And at 7 o'clock in the morning, a tug came from Espiritu Santos and took us in tow.
Right.
And the water went out, open all hatches and watertight doors. And we got out.
What were your feelings then? The relief?
Well, I was only 18. Well, I was stupefied almost to think that any moment I'm going to be killed.
Yeah.
And when you're with 5 others, you don't want to show you're a coward or anything. You keep your trap shut and whatnot. And for 20 years, it never really worried me much. But some 30 years ago, I couldn't get in a lift on my own, and we used to go for holidays with those high rises, and I always had to order, could I be on a ground floor? And in a place like this, I roll a newspaper up so that the door's never... It's fully closed at the moment, but if I was alone, I'd have it open. Yeah.
The Hobart was therefore severely damaged, and it had to be... It actually had to be taken back to Australia, didn't it?
Yeah, we were towed back to Australia. Yeah, that's right. And the moment we got back, the whole crew was dismissed. That's when I said back to Flinders to do the DEMS course.
DEMS? Now, that deck mean? It's a gunner, isn't it?
No, I've got a thing written out for you.
We're going to look it up in a minute, Brian. We've got it right here. So you, this is another one. We're just grabbing a piece of paper here.
Defensively equipped merchant ships.
Defensively equipped merchant ship course, and you did that.
Yep.
And you were posted to another famous ship, the Ondina, is that right?
Oh, yes, the Ondina. I went to America in the Ondina, the 92 days, up to on the Sydney Star, back to Australia.
Ah, right.
And then I got sent to the Mirka.
The Mirka. Now, I don't know much about that.
Well, the Mirka and the Neptuna were two German ships that Australia got as reparations from the First World War, and the Mirka was... the Kaiser's yacht.
Yes.
And they'd given it to Burns Philp to run them, but the government owned them. And when the war came along, they made the Mirka the supply ship to the fleet.
Right.
Where the fleet went, the Mirka went. And
what sort of ship was the Mirka then? What sort?
Oh, an ordinary... passenger had crew and passengers, for 20 or 30 passengers.
Right.
There's a bit in there. I became known as what was the famous American could do anything. In Britain, it's one of the things that saved Britain in the war with the rockets.
Yes.
On the south coast. And they used to not shot the planes down.
Exactly.
Well, the Mirka had a rocket thing on the stern, and I got the job of sitting in with the rockets. There were 10 aside. There were 20 rockets, 10, and you sat in the middle, and you could fire them. If an aeroplane came towards you, you could send rockets that would catch it.
And did you actually have to do that at all?
It never worked properly because of the sea air. All the points were electric. And every time I fired it, there'd be six this side and four this side. We never got the effect. In fact, we gave it away.
So the Mirka was a troop transport? You were taking troops to the islands?
No, she was provisions.
Provisions to the islands.
Yeah, we followed wherever the fleet went, we went with her.
And you were a gunner? And were you attacked very often?
Hmm?
Were you under attack very often?
No, we weren't. We missed a lot of it. We got to Hollandia.
Yes.
Humboldt Bay.
I've got that here, yes.
And the American fleet, I've never seen anything like the ships that were there. And there were so many ships, and all our ships were there. It was the last big battle of the war coming up.
Right.
And we got sent to Manus Island to take on some more fuel. We anchored too close to an ammunition ship, and it blew up. We lost several killed. And I, at the time of the thing, I was stepping from one place to another. We had big lintels to stop water, and my feet got caught on the lintels, and I went forward with the blast from the ship, but I didn't go over the side. And some went over and got drowned and whatnot. And that was the end of the Mirka. We finished up. We had to go back to Brisbane, and I don't think we got towed. We went under one engine or whatever it was, and I've got the story in there. What happened to me?
Yes, I can see that there.
I went to Whyalla, and joined one of the brand new river class ships.
You joined a river class merchant ship, the River Derwent.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
And you really liked the men you were serving with. You called them in your memoir here the salt of the earth. Right? That's what you said. Yeah.
The war is getting near the end, and I'm in Adelaide, and June was in Adelaide too, and I think she went back to Melbourne. She worked for the Air Force. She had an Air Force uniform on, and a friend of hers had been asked by Scobie Breasley,
the jockey,
had gone to England to try his luck in England, and he'd asked this woman, who was also a WAF, would she look after his house while he was away. He lived in Caulfield, and June and I were thinking about when we'd get married, and this came up, and the war was approaching, and we decided we'd wait till the war was finished and we'd get married, and we did, and our honeymoon was to go back to Melbourne, and we lived from August when we got married till Christmas when she quit the finished with the Air Force. We had 4 months honeymoon in Caulfield at no expense to her, to us, looking at, she was going to work, and I managed to get down to the naval depot in Melbourne, at Port Melbourne, and we had 4 months there for a honeymoon. We did all sorts of things in that. Went the races and did all sorts.
You got married in 1945?
Yeah.
What date was that?
On the 18th of August.
18th of August? 45.
Yeah. That when the war finished?
15th of August, just right.
Yeah, 18th, of 3 days after the war.
But after the war, after all this colour, seeing the Panama Canal, seeing the lights of New York, all this stuff, you were now working, building a house, looking at Port Adelaide.
No, but I would have paid for the job. I had the most fabulous job ever known.
Tell me what you did. Customs?
I became a boarding officer. All things considered, I thought my life was pretty good. The war changed my life, the way I view things, the way you should view things.